Welcome to this week's 2 Minute in the Middle. This is where two guys from the Midwest talk about politics and current affairs. I'm Craig Huey.
I'm Brandon Kinnick.
And this week kind of writes itself. There's the Supreme Court nomination fiasco with Justice Kavanaugh, the awesomeness of the New York unanimous op-ed. And I think we talked about ending with a little bit of is Alex Jones done, and is it fair to kick people off Twitter and social media, even if they are complete lunatics and crackpots?
Right, and that's a topic that keeps reemerging as we see just more and more outlandish activity on those social platforms.
So do you think as a conservative that conservative voices are being silenced in social media?
You know, I think that happens time to time. I think there are specific instances of that happening with politicians here and there, but on the whole, it's not. There's not some type of mass persecution when it comes to conservatives. The biggest offenders are those who are on the fringes, who are really violating these codes of conduct that these platforms have in place.
And we talked about, okay, so if Alex Jones is the bar for getting kicked off, that's a pretty high bar.
Right.
I mean, come on. That's Alex Jones has done everything that one can manage to violate not only the rules of the platform, but just good taste, moral norms. If there's anybody deserving to get kicked off, it's him. But we'll pick him up later.
I mean, he peddles in, conspiracy theories that inflict a lot of damage and are, apt to cause, some crazy person to act violently, possibly.
So let's start with the Supreme Court hearings for Brett Kavanaugh. So I've tried to watch as much as I can out of that. I worked from home one day this week, and I had that running in the background. To be honest, I got about 30 minutes in, and I just muted it and just couldn't listen anymore because I didn't understand what the point was. No questions get answered. Is this a political infomercial?
Yeah,
What exactly am I watching?
Well, this is everything that's wrong with modern politics. Again, this is the frustration that I think most Americans have when it comes to a lack of substance and just a lot of fluff. So these hearings now have just become a case where the nominee gets up there, tries to be as non-confrontational as possible and reveal as little as possible. That's an exercise that's done behind the scenes. And the senators know that, and they know that they're not going to get complete answers, but they use it to pontificate and to basically provide opportunity for them to amplify their persona, their standing, especially those that have higher aspirations for higher office.
Yeah, I don't know if you know this or not, but I'm pretty sure Cory Booker is going to be running for president.
I think Cory Booker, Kamala Harris, I think both of those two are running for president, and they've used this as a platform. So it's really a way to pander and play to the base. Yeah. Problem, though, is it creates false expectations. I think base voters may start to think, oh my gosh, we can fight this and we can prevent that, and it's not going to happen. The votes aren't there.
So let's talk about a couple of concepts. One is that the minority party can fight this. That doesn't exist. As a Democrat, it pains me to say it, there is nothing we can do to keep Brett Kavanaugh off the Supreme Court. It's not going to happen. The Republicans in the Judicial Committee, they'll let this go on for another weekish or so. Then this hearing's done. He passes through committee, and with 51, he passes through the Senate, and he becomes our next lifelong Supreme Court nominee.
Right, and you have several red state Democrats that are up for election this
Absolutely.
Year, and it would be political suicide for them to not vote in favor of them.
And with and I never heard it called the Ruth Bader Ginsburg rule. This acceptance of basically, I don't have to answer anything about rulings that I've made or rulings that I might make. I didn't know there was a formal kind of tradition or policy around that being acceptable. But with that in place, there are no more gotcha moments. There are no more Borks. There are no more, we're going to find out something about you that's going to eliminate you from being considered. This is all just a charade at this point.
Completely. And because the court has become so much more politicized and polarized.
Yeah.
I mean, once upon a time, you could get justices like Kennedy and like Sandra Day O'Connor and like Souter, who might be mavericks in terms of after they're on the court. There's no chance of that happening because these nominees are vetted completely and there's a litmus test involved. And it's about, each side, being able to get what they want out of this. And that's why, too, you've seen a change in the votes on these nominees. Many of these past nominees would be approved 97-0 or 85, you know, to 9, and that doesn't happen
anymore.
It's
never going to happen.
We started to see that change with Roberts, where he won on a like 77-25, and then from Roberts onward, like all of these nominees, it's been like in the 60s, 50s, some of them, and I think it's just going to always be like very, you know, cutthroat close from this period
on. So, as Republican, do you... One of the common, I think, kind of beliefs is that Republicans feel in some ways they've voted for and were sold a bill of goods by certain candidates for the Supreme Court that once they got there did not rule the way they expected.
Right.
And I think this is, hey, we're through how these people are vetted. What is it? Through the, what's the
Federalist Society?
The Federalist Society. Yeah. Part of this is Gorsuch and now Kavanaugh. They're going to deliver what Republicans expect out of them when it comes to rulings on taxes, health care, abortion, and other more traditionally conservative issues.
Right. That's the hope. Now, there's still opportunity for, you know, a justice to deviate from, you know, those expected, you know, ideological norms. I mean, we saw Roberts do that on the healthcare law.
And Roberts in the healthcare law.
And he could play a pivotal role, you know, moving forward, too, depending on how he sees it. There's a lot of, you know, chatter that, you know, how he sees his place and his role, you know, in the court. And so that might guide how he votes down the road. But for the most part, yes, these are politically pure, vetted, tested. It would be rare to see them, you know, deviate from that. I mean, that's where we're at.
And that's what's got Democrats, I think, so fired up. And the fact that in some ways you can just take Trump at his word. He wants people that are going to try to overturn Roe v. Wade.
Right. But again, you know, for consistency purposes, I mean, if you look at President Obama's nominations. Mm-hmm. I mean, it was no different, but on the left side. I mean, these were people that were vetted, you know, that for the most part are going to vote, you know, ideologically down the left side of the spectrum. So, I mean, both sides do this. I mean, it's not, we're just at that place. So it's, again, I get the political posturing, but, you know, it's, you know, for Democrats to be outraged or like, oh my gosh, I can't believe he's conservative or he might, you know, shift the direction of the court. Well, of course he is. I mean, what do you expect?
Yeah.
Trump is not going to nominate somebody like Elena Kagan or Sonia Sotomayor. It's just, it's not going to happen.
So I guess what's got us so fired up, one, reproductive rights and abortion is an easy button to push. So if you want to get your base fired up and you want to point at somebody and say this person is going to do something that you adamantly disagree with, the abortion issue is one of those that we can play at any given time.
Top issue as far as
secondly, we've promoted to the Democrats I'm talking about now have promoted to their base that somehow precedent is something that cannot be overturned. That is 100%. Not correct.
Oh, exactly.
This idea that because in 1973, Roe versus Wade went through the Supreme Court, and then there was another two or three big cases in the next 20 years that seemed to confirm the precedent that this is a decision that could never be overturned. That's just a fantasy on the Democrats' side.
Oh, and there's plenty of examples of that. I mean, case in point, Dred Scott decision.
Yeah. Yeah, Brown versus Board of Education.
Right.
Jim Crow was considered settled law. Segregation was considered settled law. There is no really such thing that there's nothing that prevents precedent from being overturned. And then this super precedent that Kavanaugh tried to kind of come up with that Roe v. Wade not only was once, but then it was confirmed again through precedent, somehow making it that it can never be revisited. That's just absolutely not true.
No.
And I don't know what kind of fantasy we've told ourselves that we can't, and this gets to the point what you said, we can elect no Supreme Court justice that would ever hear an argument against Roe v. Wade. That's ridiculous. That's not going
to
happen.
Exactly. And it could very well happen. I think what's more likely to happen is you will have cases that more directly chip away at it rather than reverse it outright. Yeah. So it just pile on regulations, make it more difficult.
So let me give you two examples of those that were shot down, I think, last year by the court, but will resurface. One is that all abortion clinics must have the same surgical standard as a hospital. They must be built in the same way that you would build a hospital surgical room. That closes the majority of abortion clinics in the United States, and it prevents really any new ones from opening. The second one was that if you are a doctor at an abortion clinic, you must have attendee rights
at a hospital. Right.
That's not going to happen. That removes doctors from being in the service of providing abortion. Those two things that were shot down, I believe it was in 2016 or 2017. If they come again, there's a high probability that those are passed at this point.
Right. Yeah, I agree. I think we could see definitely a 5-4 decision this time.
Yeah.
or 6-3 with that. So that's the
that's
the danger. So it's I could completely understand Democrats being on edge and nervous, but at the same time, it's, you know, again, the takeaway from this is elections have consequences.
100%.
And if they, you know, the best thing they can do is go to their base and say, see, this is going to happen. It's a done deal.
Hey, Dems, if you don't want the people of Kentucky controlling what the rest of the country thinks about and has access to health care and reproductive rights, win a goddamn election.
Yeah.
Because that's basically what you got. Mitch McConnell is going to get these people through. That's what he's there for. I hate Mitch McConnell. I'm on record of saying that.
I don't think you've ever said that.
I do have an odd respect for him, though, because Mitch McConnell is simply just executing the rules of the Constitution as they are written out. Doesn't care about what you feel about what precedent is. He is, for his side, he is playing the game in the way the game is going to be played in 2018. And the results he's going to get are multiple people on the Supreme Court.
Exactly. I mean, he doesn't mess around when it comes to, you know, doing the work of the president. I mean, that's really why he's there. He just he does what he's told.
Well, you think we're losing our minds now? Let something happen to RGB in the next 2 years.
Oh, God, yeah.
That's when things are really going to get...
You know, it's interesting, too, just over the past 18 to 24 months, with everything that's happened and with the court taking on a new role, RBG has really become like mythologized among the left. I mean, you've seen this whole
documentaries, just, merchandise. You got it.
There's a movie coming out
of her workout routine.
Right. It's interesting. So, and I think a lot of that is a fear, right? Because you know, we know what's coming down the road. I mean, she's up there in years. I mean, it's only a matter of time. And that's, talk about all hell breaking loose. That's going to be.
So watching the proceedings this week, we should just get rid of this. Not only does the candidate, the nominee, doesn't have to answer any questions of any consequence, this is a 10 to 12 minute infomercial for every senator that's asking questions.
Well, and this is what I don't like about it. I think that right now I don't like that the Democrats are trying to play gotcha when it comes to race and some of this stuff and pointing that out there and the whole political maneuvering. Once upon a time, the whole basis for these hearings was for advise and consent. That's the role of the Senate, to do their due diligence and dig into the background in terms of whether these nominees are fit for office, whether they really have actual controversial decisions, judicial decisions that would preclude them from serving on the court. And I feel like even like the substance of that is set aside for, you know, just the trivial and trying to score political points.
And Kavanaugh passes both of those tests easily.
Right.
That there's nothing in his past that's going to keep him off.
And I've said this time and time again, but he is probably the best nominee you could get from this administration. If you look at the alternatives that were being considered, I mean, much, much worse. I mean,
hey, Dems. Because you didn't pick the fight you should have picked with Merrick Garland doesn't mean this is the time to have the fight.
Right.
If you're pissed because we did nothing, I don't know what you're hoping to accomplish now.
No.
The people standing up and yelling, that does nothing. We'll get to Spartacus, I guess. I'm a fan of Cory Booker.
I've liked him, he's an ideas guy, but he's completely grandstanding political posturing now, and it's not a good look on him because he's not known for that. I mean, he hasn't been until recently. I mean, he used to be the guy who was kind of in the center, you know, let's breathe, you know, let's, you know, calm, rational.
And,
again, but he's playing to the base. I mean, you guys have a very high energy, base that's very upset, obviously, with what's going on. And there's the feeling that there's a need to play to that and to address that.
And Corey, what are you trying to do? This is what I don't get. So you made this big spectacle of yourself about how you were the bad boy breaking the Senate rules to in a fit of civil disobedience because the country deserved to know what was in these emails. Okay, I'll play along. I gotcha. Now deliver by giving me something in the email that's worth breaking the rules for. In the documents right. that he released, or they released before, or who knows what the order of operations was. Did he actually break the rules? Did they not? It was a big nothing.
Yeah.
Okay, Kavanaugh really doesn't like racial profiling. Okay? And maybe that Roe v. Wade, not all scholars say that's settled law. All right, that's your big Spartacus reveal?
All that lead up for just that. Yeah, there's
Corey, we're trying. We're looking for anybody to get behind and say you're our guy, or you're the person we're riding with. But that was you can't do us dirty like that.
You gotta have more than that if you
absolutely.
Come. And but I think there, you know, there's an appetite for Democrats to be more aggressive. We've talked about this, and the feeling that, you know, nobody's stepping up, and the Democrats are just like, you know, they're not strong, they're not aggressive. So I'm sure that plays well. But, you know, it's about how you utilize that, and, you know, and you've got to, you know, channel that in a way that's productive, getting people out to the polls. I think grandstanding, ultimately, and creating false expectations on whether or not a nominee is going to confirm does it do that. But, hey, if you go out to the voters and say, hey, this is a consequence of you not showing up to vote, you want to change things, actually get out to the polling place and bring your, you know, your niece, your nephew, your sister, your brother, bring everybody.
That might be the best form of protest. Of saying, hey, you know what? What I'm going to do is we're going to go out and try to register 5,000 more people in this district that we nearly lost to try to get to get people to the polls to actually win it.
Right.
Because this is going to go on for a little bit longer than he's going to get confirmed. The only two possibilities are Murkowski and Collins. I haven't heard a peep out of them two.
No, that's interesting too. And yeah, they're the ones, and they haven't said anything, so I'm not sure, you know, where they stand. But then again, the dilemma is, even if you would have them as no votes, you know, that's offset by the red state Democrats, at least a few of them that would vote yes.
If you could hold all of them together, all the Dems, which I admit that's going to be tough. I think what we're finding too, and healthcare is more of an issue that those two, Murkowski and Collins, mm-hmm. felt they needed to take action on more than abortion.
Right.
I think if you look at for their districts, especially like in Alaska, where what is the kitchen table conversation, many more times it's going to be about healthcare and healthcare issues, probably more than it is about abortion.
And the same in Maine, which is an aging state, very aging.
And both of them know they will never fully overturn Roe. Not going to happen. It's just, they'll chip away at it. They'll turn some powers back to the states. But they know the Republican Party has absolutely no appetite for a full reversal.
And the problem is that would be, it's no longer a winning issue, because then it ceases to be a campaign issue, just like immigration does. I mean, it goes back to, you know, again, it's, you know, somewhat of a... antithetical view to take, but these issues, they need to run on them. They need to use them for fundraising. And if they cease to have value, then what are they going to run on? They have to change their platforms.
As we think about,
it's a very cynical view to take, but I think it's the
what other view can you take? I mean, it's not cynical if there's evidence, precedent, and history of it happening. And I think what you just said, all three of those exist. Wouldn't in when we put together our Democracy 2.0 platform, how we this process would be one to change to.
Oh yeah.
If this is how we're going to do this, what's the point? Just have an up down vote of thumbs in the Senate one day and just be done. There's just no way.
Well, it's a spectacle.
This gives
it's a
nothing.
Waste of time. Speaking of the Democracy 2.0 platform, I was having a conversation with a Democrat, a friend just the other day, who brought up the same point we've been talking about, that the Democrats need an agenda, something like the left version of like a contract with America, but that's actionable, that's reform oriented. And I had to tell him, I'm like, we've been talking about that.
We've
like,
got that.
Yeah, come on.
And this is my point. And you just said this too. We'd rather watch Cory Booker do whatever the hell he's doing and give ourselves, I guess, a pat on the back that now we're being tough, I guess.
Yeah.
Kamala Harris does the same thing. She just does it a little more, just a little more covertly. She's not trying to act out overly kind of over the top Spartacus stuff like Booker.
More cautious,
but what's this idea with, so have you talked to anybody at this law firm? And he's like, I don't know. There's like 300 lawyers there. If you've got a question, you can ask me, but I don't. My point is, great, you're going to play some gotcha with him.
Right.
If you're not going to deliver on that, I don't really understand what you're over-promising me in an area that right now a lot of us are very excited and very hopeful that something can be done. But again, you're waving something that you cannot deliver.
Exactly. There's no smoking gun. We had the lead up to supposedly something big, and there was nothing. So
If I think of Republican nominated Supreme Court justices, Brett Kavanaugh is the absolute case study for all of them.
Yeah.
I mean, he is what he is. Did you get involved with the, and I'll make the gesture at you so you know people can't see us. What'd you think of the whole thing starting off with his aide flash the white power sign?
Oh, I thought that was ridiculous. Ridiculous distraction. I mean, that aide is half Jewish, half
Mexican, I think.
Yeah, Hispanic.
Yeah.
You know, again, I think it's, again, this mindset of trying to read something into everything. I mean, you know, people make, you know, motions and gestures with their hands all the time without thinking. And especially those hearings go on for hours. And to assume
yesterday
that
was 14 hours, 15 hours. Maybe I missed the meeting, but when did OK become white power?
I don't know that either. I first heard it brought up during Charlottesville. That was the first time I heard somebody mention it, that it became. But I don't think it was always a thing. I feel like that's something that, like,
I think somebody made that shit up.
Yeah. Because I was like, really? Like, I'm pretty sure I had pictures of when I was a kid doing that.
Every human being has in the United States has made the OK sign at some point to somebody. I don't think it means that.
Yeah. Well, and if you look at the photo, I mean, she looks like at times she's just looking off. It's not like she's, like, you know, signaling to anybody. I mean, it's not, she's
directly.
That is
kind of an odd way to rest your hands, I guess. But right on cue, right out of the gate, we as Dems have to just really. That's how we're going to start this. We want to be serious, and we want this to be taken serious, and we want to have a meaningful discussion, and we're willing to fight for our principles on this, and that's where we go.
Well, and it gets back to the problem of, you have to try to cut through the news clutter, and so it's lack of attention, right? So if you want attention focused on the court shifting and, you know, this major seismic ideological shift, but then it's like, oh, we're going to be stuck on apparently a, you know, signal made by a staffer. It gets you off topic. It gets you off course. It does nothing. And then it's just a distraction. We spend, you know, what, how long talking about that?
And the seismic shift is the next one.
Yeah.
Because the next one, it's got to be somebody on our side for the most part, unless somebody dies unexpectedly. That's going to be, we should be working now to change the rules and to make it better, to get a better outcome for the judges moving forward. This whole thing of what we're doing now, I don't understand what this is and what it gets us.
Yeah. I mean, the court is like a seesaw, right? And so it's at the precipice right now where it's, you know, right there. So you take one more off, and then the next, you know, one, it goes straight up.
If Trump gets three Supreme Court nominations in one term, that is, I don't know. I heard today the Democrats' odds of winning back the Senate continually go up.
Right.
They've got to win 7 of 9 toss-up states. Now that Texas,
that's interesting. Texas, Tennessee, the Democrat is leading, which is interesting. Yeah.
So, Dems, if you really want to do it, you should be registering people to vote. You should be getting your ground game together. yelling in a Supreme Court nomination, that's going to do squat.
No.
Interrupting the chairman. I'm glad they didn't walk out.
Yeah.
You're a U.S. Senator,
well,
for God's sake.
Well, it's bad precedent.
On.
Like, at the very least, absolutely, you may not be happy with it, but there's got to be some level of decorum. I mean, we can't have, like, anarchy when it comes to these proceedings.
This is the proceeding defined by the Constitution of the United States.
Right.
You don't like the way it's going, it's not going your way, and that's not your guy. Okay, win an election, get Mitch out, do what you
right.
want to do.
Motivate your voters to get out there. That was the biggest
Absolutely.
Issue of 2016.
Yep.
It wasn't that all of the support shifted to Trump. It was a base turnout, and the base yep. had a turnout. There were large segments of it, African-Americans in particular, where voter turnout was way down over
yeah.
the last election. I mean, that's a huge problem that has to be confronted this time around.
So that was, you know, the start of the week. You know, like I said, Monday, I hate short weeks where Monday's the day off.
Mm-hmm.
Every day off, like Labor Day, it should always be a Friday. Friday's
oh, yeah.
a much better day to take off
Not than
a
Monday.
Oh. Than Monday. Because then we've talked about your week is totally ruined
yeah.
when you show up Tuesday. Because yeah. it's almost like if you get off Friday, everybody adjusts and stops working Wednesday.
Right. You see it starts to
now
slow down.
Now it's like, oh, crap, we got to cram 6 days worth of work into four days.
Oh, I hate
so
that.
was it Wednesday? Thursday? Wednesday when okay. the op-ed hit?
Wednesday. Yeah.
So everybody has got to have heard about this by now. A senior, I'm going to say administrative official or administration, wasn't a senior White House official. It was a senior person in the administration.
Right. I think I've heard the terminology that this person is in the White House in some capacity.
I think everybody wants them to be.
I think that's probably
in the White
want
House.
To think that, but.
Because it makes the story better.
I've heard it could be like an agency head, which means they might not necessarily be in the White House,
yep.
if that's the case.
It could be a secretary's, somebody underneath them.
A deputy.
It could be a deputy.
Yeah.
It could be one layer removed from
right.
direct contact with the president.
This middle
person,
management.
I guess, reached out to the New York Times.
Right.
And basically wrote an op-ed basically saying, I am part of a resistance movement that exists within Washington and within the White House.
We're fighting to restrain the worst impulses yeah. of the president at bay. Exactly. And the fact that I think is most illuminating is that, you know, this person and others are apparently removing papers from the president's desk and
yeah.
trying to keep things from him.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So one, that op-ed was very well written. It was professionally
yes.
written. I don't think you or I'll only speak for myself. I couldn't write something that good. Looking at who is in his cabinet, I think there's only a handful of people that could have written something that well. So it had to be somebody out of Sarah Huckabee's group or somebody out of kind of the press relations corps, or somebody worked with the Times to write that. Or they worked with a staffer to
Some
write it.
Some wordsmithing help, yeah.
Something. Because that was
very
like
well
journalistically professional grade writing. I don't know if Mike Pompeo or even Mike Pence puts pen to paper and comes up with that.
Yeah, there was speculation that there was a word used in that piece.
Lodestar.
Yes, lodestar.
Who the hell uses lodestar?
They said that Pence had used that word before, and so that's why there's
been
that
some
speculation.
Writings.
Yeah.
Pence has political aspirations.
Oh, yeah. I don't see that as
he's not dying on
he's
this
not
rock.
Going to do that,
that's
no.
not going to happen. The other thing that was interesting is some people speculated maybe this was like three people. And
oh,
they had a staffer write this, and they're going to come out as we are this cabal that's been keeping you safe, and it's not one person, it's multiple people.
Yeah, so we essentially have a shadow government, which is another angle of it I find fascinating,
yeah.
that we seem to all be okay with this like bloodless coup that has happened, and we pretty much have people running the show that are unelected and that are in many times faceless or nameless to us because they're not household names,
yeah.
And they're conducting basically policy on behalf of... Well, not even on behalf of the administration, but I guess the American people.
So
that's also something I think that
yeah.
is, you know, there. On one hand, you're kind of like, oh, you know, good. I'm, you know, glad that, you know, we're not, you know, going to war today or we're not,
yeah.
you know, doing this. But at the same time, that's not That's very discouraging. That's not how this works. That's not stable. I mean, that's something that happens in banana republics, not in
I don't think this was a good idea. West. I don't think this overall is a positive. Although I am actively waiting for the day that President Trump is not President Trump.
Right.
To what you just said. This is not how America operates. No. And if you're that upset by it, leave.
Name to it.
Put your name to it. Write a book. Campaign against him. Get him out.
Well, and again, if there's truly this many people in the cabinet that feel this way, you know, come together. Like, I mean, start the 25th Amendment process. Even if it doesn't go through Congress, send a message by having as many of you as possible come out and say, hey, this is not what we think. Resign en masse together. I mean, there's tactics that you can utilize that would be much more productive than this. At the end of the day, we don't know who this is. We may never know. But it feeds into Trump's paranoia. I mean, it might make him really go off the rails now. Who knows what he may do because he feels that he's, you know, being attacked, and he's not somebody who shies away. He just digs in, and there's already rumblings that, I mean, he's having every person basically, you know, interrogated.
Wants to take a lie detector test.
Right.
Oh, my God. If any employer, I don't care who it is, ever came to me and said, something happened, you need to take a lie detector test, you could kiss the fattest part of my ass. It's like, we're
it's like,
done.
See ya.
We're done. That's ridiculous.
Well, and I guess the most disturbing thing is that, you know, president is accusing this person of treason because, again, he doesn't know the meaning of treason. That's done against him, he sees as treason.
Can somebody look that word up before they throw it around a little bit?
We just throw that around all the time.
Brennan throws it. We were critical of him. It's the same thing. Way too much.
But again, the interesting thing, development just this afternoon, he's asked the attorney general to
his buddy Jeff,
to investigate this person and find him or her. The attorney general again is like the hot seat.
But we're not learning anything new.
No.
So Bob Woodward, who is kind of the gold standard in journalism for truth and the way it should be done.
Right.
He came out with, or his book
his
is
book
dropping
comes out
next week.
Yeah.
You start seeing the rounds on that. All that is a confirmation of what Michael Wolff's book was.
What we all thought was happening. It's
Wolff
more detail.
Gross. And he did some gross stuff promoting his book. It was easy to miss him. Omarosa is Omarosa. I mean, she's just going around looking for any opportunity to make a buck.
Self-promoter.
But Woodward, this is a little bit different. But it's just more of the same. Trump intellectually isn't that smart. I think everybody knew that. From a management style, he doesn't manage anything. He goes from one explosion to the next. The people around him have to manage him and manage his day to day. I don't think, while all of these things are somewhat damning, there's nothing new here. And there's really nothing. What's going to rattle you at this point in time?
No, I agree. Other than some of the specific instances, particularly as they relate to foreign policy, you know, wanting to assassinate the Syrian president Bashar al-Assad.
And apparently he just blurts out, well, can't we just kill him? I mean, come on.
Right. Wanting to terminate a trade agreement with South Korea in the midst of what was happening with the North.
What in the world?
I mean, again.
But that's just being dumb.
Right.
That's just being a 12-year-old.
So we have validation.
And everybody,
of that. I mean,
everybody knew that.
Yeah.
This is what drives Dems crazy. This is all baked in the cake stuff. There's just nothing new. Nobody voted for Trump for his intellectual prowess.
Right.
That's not why he's in the White House. So you've worked for a senator. You've been on a senator's staff.
Yes, I have. Yeah.
And you also worked for a congressman.
I worked on campaigns for congressmen. Okay. So it's staff for senator. Yeah.
So you lived in Washington.
Right.
You went to work every day.
I did.
For a U.S. senator on the Capitol. You have been in staff meetings with a senator and other high-end government officials.
Yes.
Is that all fair to say?
That is, yes, exactly. Okay. I've been a one of those in committee room hearings, as you've seen staffers taking notes, you know, on behalf of the boss, done that too. Yeah.
So at any time, did Senator Moran ever direct his staff to do something, and as he walked out, everybody looked at each other and said, no, we're not doing that.
Never. That never happened. It was unthinkable.
Did it even cross anybody's mind to be like, No. We ain't doing that. That's dumb.
No, because there's nothing, again, out of political norms that was ever done. I mean, that we were ever asked to do. I mean, it was just, it was, and I think back now, and there was nothing in the Washington culture, and even having to work with other senators and their staffs, you know, on issues and, you know, especially bipartisan legislation, never witnessed an instance of that, even with another senator or their staff.
Did Senator Moran ever ask you or his staff to do anything that you thought was unethical, immoral, or brushed up against illegal?
No.
No.
Not at all.
Never even. It was. We talked about this before the pod started. If you compared it from a palace intrigue perspective to other corporate jobs you had working for the senator and working in Washington, it ranked way below some of your corporate experiences. Completely.
Everything was very buttoned up, behavior even. I mean, it was a very different vibe than even corporate America, what I'm used to.
And this line of questioning is that, hey guys, this isn't normal. This isn't just how Washington operates. This is all basically due to Trump's style, how he's running his staff. If I'm Trump, I fire John Kelly today. Because it's like, listen, you're the one that's supposed to have control of this.
Right.
Obviously, you don't. We need to go in a different direction.
Well, the level of dysfunction, that's the thing. I had never witnessed it. And we had nothing, again, anything like it when I was on staff.
Fights among staffers, nobody backbiting each other.
No.
You generally worked as a pretty cohesive unit.
Exactly. There were disagreements that would happen from time to time. Well, and then we would discuss them out and then plan on a course of action and move on. And those were mostly around procedure, right? You know, carrying out, you know, different requests and how about, you know, management, you know, within the office, but nothing like that. And nothing that was aired in public. I mean, we did have to worry about, you know, our boss blindsiding us or saying something publicly, or about having to answer for something we were caught off guard by unexpectedly in terms of his position or a statement by him. None of that ever happened. It was so... I don't want to use, I mean, I think the word bland makes it sound like, oh my gosh. But I mean, from the standpoint of there was nothing unusual or untoward, it was bland. It was just run of the mill, doing your work on behalf of, you know, the people that you're representing and, you know, trying to ensure that you get work done on time, that, you know, legislation is moving, that communication is happening. It was very much by the books.
So again, it's, I think when people say, oh, this is just how it goes, this is just somebody disgruntled.
And I don't know why we have that mindset now to think that, again, it's the moving of the goalposts, right? So continually to where we think, oh, this is just normal, or we shrug it off, or everybody does that. And I cannot tell you how many times I've heard that as an excuse to Trump's management style or something to come from the White House saying, oh, well, I'm sure that goes on, blah, blah. I'm like, no, it actually does it. Yeah. Like, that's not typical. There may be instances of it happening, you know, anecdotally, but it's not the norm, and it's not accepted, and we've accepted it now.
And to, as the president, who you are and who you're and what you are from a management style, as you just said, that is your presidency,
right? It defines you.
The president is not executing tactical day-to-day stuff.
No,
he or she is running the show. They are setting the tone. What I say, how I say, who I say it to, who I put my arm around, who I shake hands with, who I yell at is really what that sets the tone for everything.
So from day one, we've had leaks from this White House. We've had infighting. We've had backstabbing among the staffers themselves. And again, like you said it well, that tone is set from the top. So that's a tone that the president sets. And then, you know, under him, that's basically how policy and procedure is carried out. So, and that's not normal.
Media eats this up. Yeah. You know, if you're MSNBC, CNN, you know, this is confirmation of everything. Oh my God, they said the 25th Amendment. This is another avenue to get rid of Trump. Once again, they never follow through with what it takes to execute on the 25th Amendment.
Right.
The cabinet and the VP can't just decide one day, well, you're done.
Yeah.
The majority of us voted and we're done with you. 2/3 of each branch of the legislature has to vote to remove, which will never happen. That's a harder road than impeachment.
Oh, completely.
So,
but it does send a powerful message if they were to take that type of action, like right before an election or, you know, September, October, where we're at now. And, you know, again, it's not going to change the outcome, but it puts, you know, the president's party in the hot seat in terms of like, wow, this is something we have to confront. And I think it plays into a narrative, and it also plays into a lot of these races that are happening, that there's a level of dysfunction that's just so overwhelming.
So Obama comes out today and gives his first kind of political speech where he names Trump, goes at Trump.
Yeah, doesn't shy away at all.
Back into the political arena.
Right, nothing subtle.
Is that good or bad?
I think it's good for him and for motivating the base, because he right now the Democratic Party doesn't have a leader, you know, a national leader that who is rallying the troops. And part of the biggest criticism is we see instances of, you know, people making statements here and there and trying to latch on to somebody like Alexandria
Ocasio-Cortez.
Trying to latch
on. Did I say that? I think I came closer than you did.
Ocasio-Cortez. Yeah.
Damn it. That's the one I can't get.
So, he can make that case better than anybody because he has such a commanding presence, and
true,
he has the 8 years that he can go back and compare to.
I'm just a fan of one president at a time. I what G-Dub has done. I think he has done it correctly.
And that's a norm, by the way, that you do not.
2 years is a little much. And if you do get back after 4 to 8 years removed from the president, you come back at the presidential level.
Yeah. Because GW has made some swipes at Trump, but they've been subtle. I mean, he hasn't said him by name, but he's given speeches where he's talked about the environment and the culture and, you know, and how it's not healthy long term. Yeah. I mean, so, but it's a very different thing to go after the president by name and to really hit the party that hard. So,
do you think it was McCain's funeral that maybe started all of this?
I think it was, and I think even McCain's funeral probably had an impact on this anonymous, official from the White House who did the op-ed. I think that may have been the straw that caused that person to say, oh, I'm going to go ahead and do this.
So let's do bets here, because my bet is in the next 20, 30 days this comes out. Mine is it's Dan Coats.
Oh, D&I. Okay.
Big friend of McCain, works in the security apparatus of the government. He's 75. This is his last. He has no political aspirations besides this. He is a very traditional Republican. He was a senator for years. Protection of norms and institutions are important to him. If I had to put $20 on who did it, that's my bet. Dan Coats.
Okay, that's a good choice. I wouldn't disagree with that. The other person who comes to mind that I think could be the anonymous source is Nikki Haley. So she's somebody I think. Yeah. I mean, because she has stood up on policy, she's fought back against others in the White House. She's one from the very beginning. Is unusual because she got picked for a position, even though she was a pretty, outspoken Trump critic for so long. So,
but Haley, she's got a lot of political aspirations. This goes sideways.
That's true.
Could really, if it's somebody like Haley, she did it at the behest of the head of the Republican Party.
Yeah.
If Haley did it, she said, okay, I'll help you out here, but I'm going to need some backing if this all goes sideways. Coates could just say, hey guys, I'm old, I'm done, I've done everything I need to do, fire me, I'll see you all later, I'm retired, I'll write a book, I'm done. For Haley, this would sound like a massive political risk to her future.
That's true. I think the only caveat is whoever did it, the official may be privy to even more than the average White House official knows. And so even though they're taking a chance, they're hedging their bets on that the chips are really going to fall.
This is a big this is a big risk, big reward play. Because you're right. If you know other things are coming, and it just feels like in the last month, big things are unavoidable.
Oh yeah, there's been so much that's been dropping.
It's going to happen that this person might be positioning themselves as for the windfall as part of this all starts rolling downhill.
Yeah, agreed. And I think it's a matter of time. You have this, I think it started as kind of a drip, 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 and now it's been like a cascade.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just nonstop. We can't even go week to week.
I mean, at least these two things have pushed the Mueller probe off the front page.
Yeah.
But do you think Mueller kind of adheres to that? Hey, I'm not going to take another public swipe at anybody until we get through the midterms. Do you think he adheres to that, or do you think he just doesn't care?
I don't think it impacts him one way or the other. I think he's focused solely on his job. He's a pretty apolitical guy from everybody who knows him. That's what they say. So when he comes out, when this does come out, whether it's close to the midterms or not, like, that's not going to be in the forefront of his mind, the political calculus. It's going to be about how long it takes, making sure that he has everything lined up. And he's very methodical. He's very diligent. If you look at, you know, past investigations he's been involved with. So I don't think it enters into his mind.
Did you see Papadopoulos got 14 days in jail? Yeah. God, I think they said the last person got 10.
Yeah.
Lying to the FBI like this, it typically comes with under 30 days in jail. Right. There's a max penalty of 5 years, but most people spend 30, 60, 90 days in jail.
Yeah, it would be highly unusual, particularly with no priors, to get anything more than just, you know.
And I still struggle to think Papadopoulos did anything than get drunk and run his mouth off, because he's just too stupid.
Right.
I mean, even Trump is like, we can't. Sessions was in the room a couple of times with him. Sessions, at least, is a lawyer and has enough brains to know. There's an inner circle here. There's an outer circle. Well, let's make sure we keep some information where it needs to. Yeah. Where it needs
and
to
he
be.
Isn't. You know, he was dubbed coffee boy, I think, by some of the Trump people. So
he certainly was. He was a pawn.
Right.
And I think people moved him around as needed. His trouble is he just got drunk and spouted off to the wrong guy. If he'd kept his mouth shut, nobody would ever have known this guy.
You know, it's amazing too, and we talk about how dumb criminals are. I think that, you know, applies to so many who have been involved with this campaign administration, because so much of what has come out has been just due to just ineptitude. You know, if you look at the meetings that took place, if you look at emails, I mean, you know, Don Jr., I mean, why would he be, you know, emailing back and forth with this Russian agent and not think that, hey, my emails could come out? Like, this is not something there's no forethought. They'd act in the moment, and then
this might be the stupidest group of international criminals we've ever seen.
Yeah,
I mean, this may be the dumbest group of people pulling off one of the what might turn out to be one of the most historical crimes in the United States if it happened, and it was perpetrated by a group of the dumbest people on the planet.
Well, and I think that, and again, Mueller has a wide mandate. So whatever he comes back with, you know, and while there's Trump supporters who want to focus on collusion, we can't forget that obstruction of justice is a severe, significant crime. And there is much more to bear that out. And so those dots are very easy to connect.
But anything outside of collusion, Republicans don't, they don't act. There's no... You've hung in this long. You got to see it to 2020. You may actively root and actively work against him to get elected in 2020, but anything outside of direct Russian involvement, it's just not worth it. You've invested too much in this at this point.
That's true.
You can't pull the plug now.
I guess it's just amazing that's how far the goalposts have gone. I mean, I feel like any other time in history, obstruction of justice would have easily been.
Probably.
Enough. Yeah.
Not now. What do you think about Lindsey Graham coming out and saying, we'll probably wait till after the midterms, but we'll just go ahead and run Sessions at that point.
I mean, Lindsey Graham has said a lot of things recently that caused me to...
Has he lost his mind?
He seems to, like, vacillate between trying to be independent and then being, like, a Trump defender.
Well, he's way over on the Trump trade now.
Yeah, well, and it's just ironic considering, I mean, if you look at past statements and what he's said, replay those, because it's like, this is a, you know, jump.
Well, if you fire Graham after the midterms... You're doing it to avoid, let's say the Dems take the House, you're just doing that to avoid the investigations that they're going to launch.
Oh, yeah.
Completely. And you're basically saying, it's on now. Let's just get to this impeachment thing. I don't think you guys have the votes or the stroke to do it. Let's just go. You got what you got. Great. You know, I doubt they win the Senate back. I can't see a scenario that they do. And it's just, hey, vote for it. Let's see what happens. Let's put this behind me and let's go.
Yeah.
And that might be the best thing for everybody at this point.
Yeah. I mean, it gets it out there. I mean, it basically sets the stage for, you know, 2020. So
we'll just settle this in 2020.
Right.
So let's wrap up with what we started off with, Alex Jones. So everybody, I think, who listens to this pod probably knows who Alex Jones is, maybe.
Yeah, I think
my wife has some friends who listen, and they might. Oh, really? They may not be hip to InfoWars.
Yeah, so Alex Jones, longtime radio host, InfoWars
and
program.
Diet supplementary salesperson, too.
Yeah.
Don't forget that.
You know, a conspiracy theorist, you know, who perpetuates all kinds of horrible conspiracies and just really crazy stuff. You know, believes that Sandy Hook was in, just a, you know, made up by the government and
yeah.
never happened.
Those were crisis actors
right.
who pulled that off.
He's talked about, you know, aliens controlling the brains of children. I mean, he gets into really weird...
homosexual vampires.
Yeah.
I mean, it's yeah.
You name it. I mean, he peddles in it. He believes there's a conspiracy behind everything. That's his
So MO. For people who don't know who Alex Jones is, Google Alex Jones vitamins before after photo. Have you seen this one with his shirt off?
Oh, I haven't seen that. No.
And he's like just as fat as he is in the after picture, but he has this horrible spray tan.
Oh, and he's like a spokesperson for this vitamin
There's
company?
Some vitamin company that's like the main. I will admit, I've never listened to InfoWars.
Yeah, I haven't either.
But there's some vitamin company that's his core sponsor. And he's got this picture. Picture like me with my shirt off. And in one picture, I'm just all pasty and chubby and white. In the next picture, I'm pasty and chubby, but I've spray tanned myself brown. And it's like, Alex, that's really not pushing the vitamins at all.
Yeah. What does that do? Yeah.
So if I've mentioned multiple times, I'm a huge Joe Rogan fanboy. If you've never listened to a Joe Rogan podcast, this one you're going to want to watch on YouTube. Look up him and Alex Jones. They spend 4 hours together, and it just devolves into insane
craziness. Yeah.
Craziness. And for every one thing he says that you're like, okay, I'll give you that might be something. Then there's 50 other things about homosexual aliens and controlling Hillary Clinton and the globalist conspiracy of making frogs gay.
Oh, yeah. And he peddled in the pizza gate. Yeah, that whole, yeah. I mean, and you name it. I mean, he peddles in it. And, you know, once upon a time, he would have been considered just a, you know, a fringe, you know, voice, somebody that's a, you know, not somebody who's part of the mainstream media. But let's not forget Trump actually went on his show.
Oh, yeah.
For an interview.
Oh, yeah.
And this White House gave him press credentials. He has White House
press
credentials.
He claims him and Trump are ultra tight. I mean, he claims that Trump has fed him the goods on this international pedophilia ring that's run by Obama and the Democrats. This is my point. Let's say we change the format of this podcast, Brandon, and it's going to be about conspiracies and promoting conspiracy theories.
Tell me now.
Why would you go with international pedophilia ring? Why would we go there? Couldn't we make up some shit that was less mean, less disgusting, and just more fun to spread?
Oh, yeah.
Why is it always some sort of horrible pedophilia or child molestation ring
that
led by the government? That's what I don't get.
Or denying a mass murder of grade school kids happened.
That's another thing.
When, you know, there's grieving parents. And
you and I have a conspiracy podcast and Sandy Hook happens. And Sandy Hook is one of those things. I remember that day
vividly.
Exactly.
I do too.
I worked at Perceptive at the time. And what I remember by like 2 or 3 o'clock that day, everybody just went home because you were so down. And if you had kids, you just wanted to go get your kids.
Right.
That room, that office emptied out at that. How do you as a human being, if I approach you and say, hey, Brandon, I've got an idea. I know what we can do. Let's start. What possible agenda other than just setting yourself on fire and calling attention to yourself could you possibly be trying to promote at that point?
I mean, it's just you lack a moral compass completely. And, you know, and I think I don't know that he really believes everything that he puts out there. I think that he plays a character and he makes money off of it. He does well in terms of earning a living.
So what was his thing with Rubio this week?
Yeah, so that was basically accosting Rubio. I believe that was in the Senate office building or just outside.
Wow.
And, you know, basically referring to him as frat boy and trying to and interrupting him as he continued his comments to reporter.
And he touched him
at
one point, too. I think
he did, yeah.
I think he gave him the pat, but that's a U.S. senator.
Yeah.
You typically don't reach out and put your hands on that.
Right. So Rubio rebuked him for that and threatened to, you know, call the police if he ever touched him again. And, you know, and then it just continued to go downhill from there. He continued to act like an idiot, for lack of a better word, and continued to go on.
You don't have to feel regret for calling Alex Jones an idiot.
No, I want to use
if there's somebody on the planet, that's who's
I was going to use a much worse word. Yeah, and so I stopped myself.
even I feel a little cringe when I call Trump a moron.
Yeah.
Because I just don't like calling the president of the United States a name, but there's sometimes that's all you can do.
Right. But I mean, Alex Jones has a history of this. He will accost people in public and berate them and just act like that. And that's what happened with Rubio. And it was all caught on camera. It was just a weird episode because it's like, this is our political reality where this guy, and it's his, you know, another 5 minutes of fame for him. And it becomes like one of the defining stories of that day.
So what's better, do you think? So is it better to censor Alex Jones off of, because I'm pretty sure now he's been removed from YouTube, Facebook, Twitter, almost all of his distribution channels outside of Infowars.com is pretty much done. He had a pirate radio station in Austin. They shut that down. They are basically trying to remove his voice from all platforms.
Yeah.
What would be a more effective way to censor him? Do what we just described or give him 30 minutes on every single media outlet in the world and let everybody see exactly who this guy is. What do you think would do more to shut Alex Jones down?
Well, I mean, I think there's probably some people who still don't know who he is, but I think, you know, with all of the controversies over the past couple of years, at the very least, I mean, he's kind of a known quantity. He's been exposed enough,
true,
even by mainstream publications who have referenced him and his antics.
Megyn Kelly, that was her first interview in NBC, and it was atrocious.
I mean, I do think that it's responsible to have him removed from those types of platforms. They're private companies. They're not public platforms. They have, you know, standards, you know, written codes of conduct that he clearly violates. And if they are going to retain those and actually use those, then they need to, you know, remove people that are violating those procedures. Then don't have codes of conduct.
The analogy is, so the Charlottesville riot happens. I was absolutely mortified by seeing that. Yeah. I didn't think in 2017 we would have a group of men marching with tiki torches shouting, "Jews will not replace us."
Right.
I thought we were, and maybe it's just me being naive, I thought we were at least 10 to 15 years past that. Those images and what happened, I think, was so shocking. The next time they tried it, 20 people showed up.
Yeah.
And the argument is, don't shut that down. What closes that off faster than censorship, let people see what that is. Let people see how distasteful and how disturbing and disgusting it is to watch that happen, and it will naturally take care of itself. I kind of lean to that side,
right?
But at the same time, I've got no sympathy for Alex Jones at all. You go after Sandy Hook families and stuff, you get whatever the universe throws at you. Alex Jones just needs to just go somewhere at this point. And I don't think the Republic is not going to suffer because Alex Jones has effectively been put out of business.
No, I mean, not at all. And I mean, there's plenty that will, you know, take up just a little bit less crazy, you know, arguments of his and be out there kind of, but still, you know, filling that void. But I do think it gets back to the argument of, do you give, even from a media standpoint, do you draw attention when those types of provocateurs say crazy things? Do you give them that exposure or do you just ignore them? Is it best to ignore them and kind of marginalize, neutralize them? Or do you provide that exposure and hope to shine a light on how crazy
they
are?
Can you be ignored in the age of social media?
I guess you really can't, no, because, and that's the thing too. So even though he's not on those platforms, he's still going to get exposure because he's going to have followers and supporters, you know, referencing him and calling attention to him. So he will still have his ideas and his brand out there. He just won't, it won't come directly from him. So, you know, that's why I don't see any issue with it.
I think the phrase "just ignore him" is dead.
Yeah, because you can't. That's
you
right.
Can't, you can't.
Age.
There's so much stuff, and there's so many opportunities for exposure. I don't know if you can. Can you just say, hey, just don't pay attention to him anymore, and he goes away? He still has a website that, again, he's going to draw probably 4 or 5 million clicks a month to some of his content. This is another thing, and Mike and I used to talk about this, that the idea that if you still think that the CBS Evening News is how most Americans consume and are educated, you are living 30, 40, 50 years ago. If you think the cable shows the Hannitys, the Maddows, the Lawrence O'Donnells. If you think that's where it's happening, you're about 12 years behind on that.
Where does breaking news happen? It happens on Twitter. It happens absolutely on, you know, these platforms.
I go back to Alex Jones, and I think he's probably right on this, was probably getting somewhere between 70 and 90 million views a week for his content. Joe Rogan's talked about, through all of the platforms that distribute his podcast, 70 to 80 million people a week listen to that podcast.
Yeah.
If you still think people are sitting, Sean Hannity as the number one rated, he plays to an audience of about 3 million a night. His audience is dwarfed by some of this stuff that's happening online.
Oh, exactly.
I just don't think people realize that. If I asked you, what's more important, NBC Nightly News with Lester Holt, is it, I maybe?
Think, yeah, Lester Holt, yeah.
Because I'm thinking of the bro cause, yeah. you know, the ones who really kind of stood when, from my childhood, that you would watch.
Walter Cronkite.
Yeah. They get a fraction of what some of this new media gets.
Because it's completely diluted, the landscape now. And because breaking news happens online, you also see a demographic shift. So Sean Hannity's 3 million viewers, what's the average age? I mean, it's probably over the age of 60.
Older.
Yeah, 65. Yeah. So, yeah. And that's not the case with online mediums.
Airports that his show's playing in and shit like
right,
that.
Right, that type of thing, yeah.
That's just ridiculous. So was it better or worse? What would you rather have? Three white guys on three networks reading you the news every night for 30 minutes, and that's all really you got.
Yeah.
You got the newspaper, you got that, and that's it. Or today, where it's an absolute free-for-all. You can get anything you want. The news has been much more democratized. There's way more people participating in news and in the conversation than ever before.
What we have now is best, because it allows for more transparency and more accountability. But by the same token, there are major cons in that it puts everything on an equal playing field, and not all news is equal. You know, there's a lot of fringe elements out there, and it creates this, you know, blurred lines between, you know, what is truth and what is false. And so that's what we're seeing now.
While I remember, because I'm older than you, I remember those times fondly. Today is so much better.
Yeah.
It's so much better. There's pitfalls all over the place, but it beats the hell out of the same three guys reading the same three stories on three major networks, and that's all you got.
It's much more difficult now for government to keep major secrets from the American people because of these platforms.
Yeah.
You know, if you look back at like the Vietnam War and the Gulf of Tonkin incident, and you look at other you know, major scandals that happened that were kept under wraps for so long, you know, it was a very different media landscape where that was
the Post ain't breaking the Pentagon Papers anymore.
No.
That shit would be on Twitter.
Yeah.
2 days after it was produced, and it would whip around the world a dozen times before it would.
Yeah. And so the idea of like a court injunction to stop something from printing, that doesn't even enter into the equation when you have Twitter and Facebook and these platforms and podcasts.
Things are better now. Yeah. There's no doubt about it. You may look to the past longingly and say it was easier, it was simple, but I agree with you. It certainly wasn't better.
Yeah. More access and more transparency is always better than less.
So a rare Friday night podcast, because you're out of town for your birthday this week?
I was out of town for my birthday. Nice. So Tampa, Florida. St. Pete's, Clearwater. Oh, beautiful. Wish I was still there.
Yeah,
I come back and it's been raining every single day.
It literally is supposed to rain, or chance of rain, for the next 13 days.
Ugh.
There's like a 20% chance of rain for the next 2.5 weeks.
I'm so over it, yeah.
God, I want Florida to turn blue, consistently blue so bad. Maybe next week we'll talk about Beto O'Rourke and what he's doing in Texas.
Oh, yeah, we can. Well, it'll be interesting to talk about the Florida governor's race, too, because I was in Florida and I saw all those political ads and, you know, the chatter. So it was intriguing.
Florida is the weirdest state in the union. There's no doubt about it. You get it's such a – it's like a funnel that it represents so many spots of America.
And it's so super diverse, too. Yeah. That's why it's difficult to predict what way it'll go.
And then I think it gets hot and just everybody gets crazy. My parents spend like 5 months in Florida, half the state empties out for half the year. It's just a really, really strange place.
It's one of a kind.
We could spend an hour bashing on Florida too, because I'm not a big fan of Florida. You didn't go to Orlando or anything, did you?
No. I stayed beach area. So yeah.
That's probably bad. You have no reason to go to Orlando.
No. I took my nephew there back in January. I did that once.
That's even well beyond the call of duty to do that. There's no way.
Oh yeah, that's a whole nother podcast.
All right, I think that's our hour. Okay. Thanks, Brandon.
Thanks, Craig.
Bye.
Bye.